Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there. That even wants to be a little bit mellow now, is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host Eddie Trunk.
Welcome, everybody. It's Eddie Trunk, and it's time for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Free and new episodes every Thursday. Get them wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope everybody had a great Labor Day extended weekend. And here we go, already well into September. Before you know it, we'll be talking about the holidays coming up, with Thanksgiving and Christmas seemingly around the corner. I came back from hosting Rocklahoma. Was a great time. We got it in. Was touch and go there for a bit. And we made it. We made it through. It was a great experience to be back hosting that festival, which I've hosted every year since 2007. So many great bands, so many great fans, and, some disruptions to the lineup. Slight weather issue, but not overly anything, really, given the history of that festival with weather. So got out unscathed for the most part. And obviously different times, with COVID still a thing, it's definitely some issues out there in terms of bands being able to play and the way the backstages are and stuff like that. It's definitely something that has changed greatly, but hopefully not for much longer. We'll see how that all goes. But it's good to see live music happening and fans coming out in droves, and it felt good to have a rock festival going again, and it was thrilled to host it. So if you were there, thank you to everybody who came out. Good to meet everybody who I had a chance to meet, and hope everybody is safe and enjoyed it and had a great time. And more festivals coming up now as we get into the back end of 2021, and we'll see how they go and what obstacles may or may not exist for them as things continue to move forward the best they can. As I tell you every week, the interviews you hear on this podcast originate on my SiriusXM radio show. Trunk Nation is heard live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 Eastern time on Channel 106, with nightly re-airs 10 to midnight Eastern, and full shows in their entirety anytime you want on the SiriusXM app, as well as the interviews. So if you are in the U.S. or Canada, you are not listening every day on SiriusXM and only get this podcast, you're getting a tiny fraction of what I do on a daily basis every week live on the radio. We do give you a little taste, though, for those that are outside of the U.S. and Canada, and for those that, for whatever reason, don't join me on SiriusXM. You get a little taste every Thursday of an interview that I did there, one of many, but again, not even close to the amount that I do on a regular basis. And of course, on the radio show, there's interactivity. You can call in, there's news, there's all kinds of stuff that you just don't get here on the podcast. So again, if you're in the U.S. or Canada, be sure to join me every day on Volume, SiriusXM Channel 106. And of course, thank you wherever you are for checking out and subscribing to the podcast. Social media, you'll find me at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, fan page on Facebook. EddieTrunk.com is the website. on my social media. I did post some photos and some video from Rocklahoma, including performances of Hailstorm and Rob Zombie. So be sure to go there and check it out. And that's also another way to connect. What else do I need to tell you this week as well? So I've got appearances coming up. Going to have three big nights in Houston coming up. They are October 7th, and they're all at Warehouse Live in Houston. October 7th, I'm there hosting Sebastian Bach. October 8th, for the first time ever, I'm doing my speaking Q&A show at Warehouse Live. Come on out for that. That's a lot of fun. Storytelling, Q&A with the audience, stump the trunk with prizes. That is October 8th. And then October 9th, I'll stick around and host Jackal. So 7th, Sebastian Bach. 8th, my own show doing a speaking Q&A show. And the 9th, Jackal, all at Warehouse Live in Houston. Hope to see you. Get your tickets now. Then from there, it's Monsters on the Mountain the following week, Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, October 15, 16, and 17. And a bunch of great bands playing that. MonstersOnTheMountain.com for more information there. And then it's 80s in the Sand in Cancun for the week of October 25th. Can't wait for that. Tons of bands there as well. Busy, busy October. If you're in New Jersey this coming Sunday from noon to 2, I'll be at the Heavy Metal Hall of Fame Awards doing some hosting work there. So a lot of stuff going on. Best thing to do, follow on Twitter and Instagram at Eddie Trunk for info and updates. The interview this week for you on the podcast is with Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden. This recently aired on my show on Sirius XM. It was about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago that I visited with Bruce. As you're about to hear, the interview was part of our virtual invasion series where I had an audience, a live audience virtually via Zoom, calling in and talking with Bruce. And of course, I talked to him some as well. And if you are a Sirius XM subscriber, you can watch this entire interview because it is available on the Sirius XM app as video as well. So the interview you're about to hear is Bruce talking about the new Maiden album, Senjutsu, with some listeners and, of course, myself. And you're getting an extended full-length cut here on the podcast with some extra bonus content in it. Again, I urge you to check it out for the video as well if you'd like, and you have Sirius XM. You're just getting the audio here on the podcast. So Bruce Dickinson, what can you say about Iron Maiden that hasn't been said already? Nearly 40 years of bringing us some of the finest metal ever created. Iron Maiden's brand new double album, studio album, is out now, of course. And as you're about to hear in the interview, we'll see what they can and cannot do as far as touring in the upcoming near future. We'll keep an eye on that and see how that all plays out. I think that kind of covers it. Radio show, social media, Bruce Dickinson. That'll do it. Let's get to the interview, right? Coming up, Bruce Dickinson on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. And welcome, everybody, to the latest Trunk Nation virtual invasion coming to you on Sirius XM Volume 106. It is a great honor to be joined by a man that I've been a fan of since the beginning and had a chance to interview many times over the decades. It's always great to visit with Bruce Dickinson. Bruce, thank you so much for the time. How are you today?
I'm okay. Doing good, actually. Chilling out, as they say, slightly.
I was going to chill out myself with one of these, Bruce. I just was sent some of the Hellcat beer here from Iron Maiden a bit early. I'm on the East Coast in the U.S. a bit early for me to start, but it looks I've like it's going to be wonderful.
No, I've run out. I got a six pack the other day and it's gone. I'm like, damn, need some more. You know, it's now it's really, really good. I'm delighted with it. Obviously, we had to go really round the houses a bit because of COVID, and there were some personnel changes in BrewDog, and I was supposed to go over there, and you know, we're all kind of stuck on this side of the pond at the moment, but hopefully that will change. In the meantime, it's out, and I think it looks great. I think it's a great looking can, and it's a great brew as well.
Yeah. Anybody that's been lucky enough to be in an Iron Maiden meet and greet or backstage in the hospitality rooms, now you've got an array of beers to sample because you've always got the Trooper there. And now you're going to have some Hellcat there and the others. And beyond the fact, we all know there's a lot of artists that do their own branded beer or liquor, what have you. But I know you're really involved in this and it's really, really good. I think that's the important thing to know. It's just not something to slap your name on.
No, well, that was the whole genesis of the project at the beginning was that somebody approached us and wanted us to do exactly that. And we were like, well, we're not interested in doing that. If we're going to do it, let's be creative. At which point they sort of went, oh, well, you know, that sounds like a bit like hard work. And we went, oh, yeah, but it's better to be authentic than do something, at least if you try it. And we were really lucky with the opening bid, traditional English ale, Trooper, we're 30 million pints plus now. But then we spawned a range of Trooper beers that are all brewed here. But then now we've got an Australian lager, which we call an XPA, down in Oz. We've got a Brazilian mango chocolate IPA brewed down in Brazil. So the next option, obviously, because we love getting Trooper into the States, but it is just expensive to shift liquid thousands of miles across the Atlantic. You know, we'd really love to have a partner to brew over here with. So, you know, BrewDog came along and we were like, well, yeah, let's see how this works. And so far it's been great. And the liquid is brilliant. I mean, it's really got a kick to it. It tastes, in fact, my son had a can of it last night. He goes, wow, Dad. He said, this might be my favorite BrewDog beer ever. I said, but he said, the only problem is it tastes so good, but it's 6%. He said, so I couldn't do 4 pints of this. You know, I think you'd have to grow in stature by a couple of hundred pounds, you know, before he could do that. But it is great. And it's up there with a lightweight Belgian in terms of, you know, strength, but it scores big on flavor. It's lovely. Great, great beer.
Well, I'll be digging in on the weekend. Now, speaking of being creative, another album from Iron Maiden seemingly dropping out of nowhere. And the second Iron Maiden album in a row, that's a double studio record. I find it amazing in this era where people say, well, bands should only put out singles now and nobody wants albums and what have you. Leave it to Iron Maiden to buck that trend. And second record in a row that is a double studio record. Let me get this out of the way, Bruce, because before you came on with us, we had a debate among the folks on the team here. The proper pronunciation of the album, Senjutsu or Senjutsu?
Tomato, tomato. Potato,
either
potato.
Either is okay.
Either or either. That's called
Nico
the whole thing
or Nico.
Yeah, exactly. I really don't care. I honestly don't think it particularly matters. You know, I call it Senjutsu, but Senjutsu would, you know, just take slightly longer to say. That's all. You know, I mean, it's judo, it's jujitsu, or it's ninjutsu. So Senjutsu is how I would say it, but I'm not Japanese, you know, so I think we'd have to defer to somebody from Japan for the what might be the correct pronunciation. But, you know, that's the great thing about the English language. It's whatever you want it to be.
Whose idea was the title for the record and the concept? And somebody who is Japanese now is Eddie, who is brilliant on the cover. It's a brilliant piece of art on the cover image as well. But whose idea was the whole concept for this, Bruce, and the album title?
No, that was all Steve. So he came along and said, look, I've had this idea and I think we should call the album Senjutsu. And I was like, okay, that's different. Kind of cool, Samurai Eddie. Yeah, that's really cool. What's it mean? We got a few different versions of what it actually means. I think the closest you can get to it is that it's kind of the way of strategy and tactics, you know, the philosophy of strategy and tactics. And funnily enough, there is an, and it's really the only track on the album that is specifically related to things Japanesey. You know, the rest of the album is not really at all, except there's a kind of peripheral one, which is the track Stratego, which obviously there was a board game called Stratego. Well, it turns out that Stratego, the board game, was actually based on a turn of the century French board game, which in its turn was based on what they termed Japanese military chess. And Japanese military chess is otherwise known, I believe, as shogi. And it's a very complex version of chess because basically when you get to the, you get some pieces to the other side of the board, they change sides. Which starts getting really complicated because actually you, one side does a takeover. So just at the moment when you think you've won, suddenly your own team turns against you, you know, stabs you in the back. I'm thinking, wow, that's, yeah, that's kind of prophetic, you know. But anyway, Japanese military chess, Stratego. So there is this other, you know, weird Round the Houses link that, that goes to it. But the rest of the album was just songs that happened. But we always like to put it in a nice box, you know, in a nice framework with something really cool to hang it off. And so, yeah, I mean, Book of Souls, obviously we had the whole Mayan thing and that was good for a few songs. But again, we had songs on there about the First World War and Fokker triplanes and all kinds of stuff like that. So the it doesn't have to be kind of slavishly following a particular storyline. In this case, it just hangs together as a sort of a visual concept, and it's great. I mean, the 3D Eddie was fantastic, and of course we got to slot him into the video as a 3D unit, which was something we didn't think about when we first started the video. But we were like, how could we make this work, having a essentially a 2D video and then having a 3D figure come out of the fire pit at the end? So there was a bit of technical wizardry involved there, which I think worked pretty good.
Yeah, the video for the writing on the wall, which you're referencing, is brilliant. People have been able to see that. Just Bruce, overall on the record, I mentioned seemingly to us, the fans, the record kind of came out of nowhere. But in reality, you had been sitting on it for quite a while. And the assumption from me and many others, so many bands made records during the pandemic lockdown because artists were home, they had nothing to do, let's make a record. This actually predated that. Can you fill the audience in on the seeds of this record, when it was written and how it was recorded? Because it was done quite a while ago, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we came off the initial Legacy of the Beast tour, and then we had a gap of several months, probably 6, 7, maybe 8 months before we started in the USA on the Legacy of the Beast tour, and then finished up in South America. So we were touring from kind of August all the way through till end of October time. And in the gap, we said, well, you know, what are we going to do? Yeah, we could just go, you know, Adrian could go do a lot of fishing. You know, we could, you know, David could go and lie on the beach next to his house in Hawaii. Very nice, you know. But we said, well, why don't we use, take 2 or 3 months. Let's go and use some of the energy from playing live. Let's go and do an album. Heck, why not? And that was the thinking. And Nick, funnily enough, Nick turned up and, and he was all grumpy. He was all, oh, I don't know why we're doing this. Oh, no, I was not happy in Florida, you know, playing golf, you know. And we said, well, it seemed like a good idea and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you don't have to be here for the whole time. You go back to Florida, you know. And amazing that we did do it, because if we hadn't have done it then, I mean, we did go out on tour after that. And then we all came back and then it was Christmas. And then like 3 months later, like the world ended. The original plan was to release the album basically at the end of the summer in the first iteration of lockdown, if you like. Obviously, we didn't know it was going to be lockdown. We thought we were going to be on tour. And the idea was we would release it then. But obviously that didn't happen. And then the following year, in other words, kind of like this year, we were supposed to be on tour all this summer. Clearly that was not going to happen either. And we've punted everything forward to next summer. And we thought, well, we cannot wait that long. So we got to go with the album this year. And we faffed around a little bit with exactly when and where and all the rest of it. But during the first lockdown, that's when the idea was seeded to go and spend a lot of time and energy doing a fairly extraordinary animated video. I mean, it's more like a kind of little mini 6.5 minute movie. And I thought it would be the sort of thing that might just seize people's imaginations, given that we've never done anything like that before, and given that there would probably be no touring immediately around the album. So that was the thinking on it. And then a few things, when you do stuff like that, things have a habit of happening around it that you never thought of. So the project takes on its own life. So the kind of tease that we did on the internet, like with all the clues leading up to the release and everything, we never thought about that at the beginning. That was never part of our, you know, I mean, I was involved in the storyboard and the storyline of the video and the making of and all that stuff. And the last, I just thought it would be really cool to have some kind of world premiere. I was thinking like old school, actual cinemas. But of course, that was impossible. So a mistake that happened during the making of the video kind of produced this flyer, this poster, Balthazar's Feast. And that's what gave us the idea. And in particular, fantastic girl works in our office, does all of our social media and she's an internet genius, Sarah Philp. She came up with this whole campaign, did this amazing job on it. And so we utilized some bits at the beginning of the video, because at the beginning of the video, there was always supposed to be an invitation to Balthazar's Feast. Because otherwise, why are all these people queuing up? Why is everybody going towards that building? What the heck is going on here? So unless you know that, that's your, well, once upon a time, there was a big building in the middle of a screwed up desert, right? It's the, you know, the Star Wars bit, you know, in a galaxy far, far away, bosh. Without that, the video doesn't make a whole lot of sense at all for the, you know, first halfway through it, you know, because there's no what opening storytelling bit. And we actually forgot to put that at the beginning of the video. So when the Iron Maiden fan face plants, and dead, it's like, yeah, but he should have been holding, clutching his last hope. He was hoping to get some kind of redemption from going to this thing. And basically, the guys in Blink Inc, who are amazing, but they just forgot it. They just forgot that part of the storyline. And we were so involved in the rest of it that we made an assumption that of course it was going to be in there when we saw the final edit. I thought, where is it? And Mark Andrews, who was ex-Pixar guy, and he's all story. He was like, we got to have it in there. You can't not have this part. It's essential, you know. So we came up with a poster as a quick fix rather than reanimate a whole bunch of stuff, which would take a long time. The poster came up and I just said, let's just make it like a black and white poster that looks like something that you'd see for one of these homemade things, like a homemade rave or something that people slap on a side of a concrete building. And I just came up with the, you know, heaven or hell, live forever or live forever, depending on which way you want to, you know, play with the words. And very, very simple. And that turned into this whole monster campaign, really. So a lot of things, a bit like our stage shows, when you see the whole thing, you think, wow, you know, they must have spent years planning that. And the truth is, we spent, you know, sort of 3 or 4 months planning 50% of it. And the remaining 50% of what we do on stage and the pyro tricks and things like that end up happening over the course of the first 2 or 3 weeks as ideas occur to us as we do it with a live audience. So things aren't as set in stone. And that's the, honestly, those are the fun bits. I mean, they really are.
You had everybody guessing the whole Belshazzar's feast and the t-shirts that were leaking out and popping up and the teasing on social media. I mean, even myself, it was daily fodder for me with my audience. Well, that's going to be the name of the record, or that's going to be the single. I mean, it had everybody guessing and talking, and it was a lot of fun. But I've got to, we'll talk so much more about the record, and we have an audience that's going to join us here in a second, and I'm sure ask about the record. But I have one final question about the record before we get to the audience.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's extraordinarily difficult to not only record and make an Iron Maiden album with the fan base you have that is so rabid and so passionate and wants to know everything that's going on, to do that quietly and then have a completed record for over a year and have that also be unknown and not leak and make sure that it, you know, stays under wraps until you're ready to unveil it. I imagine that turned out to be quite a challenge given the pandemic and the delay in releasing it.
Yeah. I mean, it helped that none of us had a copy of it.
Is that right?
Yeah. None of us had a copy of it. I mean, when we finished mixing it, I was the only one left in the studio, myself and Steve and Kevin. So we both, we heard it through a couple of times in the studio, and that was it, you know, closed up the laptop, took the files, whatever it was. And literally it was stuck in a vault of whatever passes for a vault, electronic vault. But anyway, it was locked up and did not see the light of day to anybody. I mean, when I was doing the storyboard to writing on the wall and was coming up with a plot, I had to jump through hoops to actually get a low-res copy of just that track, because I did make the point. I said, look, I am actually trying to storyboard the song, and I know I did co-write the song, but you know what? I'd actually like to listen to it while I write the ideas down, because it does help, actually. And I got this cryptic file that was called, I can't remember what the name of it was. It was like, you know, it was like a Beatles. I think it had like a Beatles song name or something on it, in case somebody should see it on my laptop and go, what's that, you know, and accidentally play it or whatever. So it was very, very amusing. Next time I heard it was when we were mixing Knights of the Dead, and Steve was doing it at his kind of home studios thing up in Essex. So he's up there tweaking that, and I popped along, and he went, oh yeah. I said, I've got it on the laptop. And he'd only heard it like once since, he hadn't listened to it at all. So we just put it on and listened to it. And we went, wow, this, we did a really good thing here. You know, this is really cool, you know.
It must have been cool to have some distance from it then, and then come back and revisit it like that. And I'm curious, who had the key to that vault, Bruce? Was it Rod or was it Kevin Shirley, the producer? Who was the keeper of the vault?
Basically it was Steve. So nothing really Steve. Went out without without Steve, because he was very picky and paranoid about anything.
I envision it handcuffed to his wrist, you know, like in a briefcase.
not even. I mean, I don't know where things get kept in digital vaults, so on, so to speak. I did actually get a copy, because when it was mastered in February, I went up and we were talking. I was talking Steve through the video, because I explained what it was. And then he saw some rough cuts. He went, wow, I love what you've done, man. Wow, great, you know. And then I said, well, should I, can I go and get it, get it on my laptop so I take a listen to it. He went, yeah, yeah, go on then. So I went down to the mastering guy and basically he just stuck a kind of medium res version on my laptop, you know, because Steve was like, oh no, you got to have the like, whatever it was, a 90 something K version. I went, Steve, nobody listens to stuff on 90K version. I mean, no, you do, but everybody else listens to it on whatever stuff. So I want to listen to it on the way that most people are going to end up listening to it, you know, which is on Spotify or wherever. I mean, you know, there's going to be a better version, which is going to be, you know, the version that's, you know, that they can actually buy. And obviously there's vinyl and stuff like that. And that will all sound, you know, markedly, you know, better than all the stream stuff. Because at the end of the day, digital is okay, but it has different, very different quality levels. As you know, anybody knows who listens to things on YouTube, you know,
and sure.
it's, you know, stuff gets put on YouTube, and it makes me laugh when people comment on the sound. They're like, "Oh, I don't like the mix of this; it doesn't sound very good." It's like, "Well, duh, you're listening right. to it on like a $2 set of speakers and a $2 free download. I mean, what do you think is going to happen to the sound? You know,
compressed to hell, of course. And
yeah, it's horrible. You know? But you get all these audio experts. And it's like, well, if you're an audio expert, why are you even bothering to listen it? Why are you even bother to comment on something you're listening to on YouTube? You know, that immediately exactly. tells me you're an idiot. You know, you might as well say, I played this album with my head in a bucket the other day and it doesn't sound good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Bruce, yeah. I could talk to you about so much more, but I want to let the audience jump in on this. By the way, the new Iron Maiden record that we're talking about, Senjutsu, is if you're listening to this on its premiere on Wednesday, the 1st of September, the album is out this Friday. Now, we're replaying this multiple times, so if it's September 3rd or later, the album is available. So go get it, and you know, I would strongly suggest a physical copy, whether it be CD or vinyl, not only for the better audio, but the packaging is going to be phenomenal, which is also a trademark of Iron Maiden releases. Be right back with more with Bruce Dickinson after this on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
At Founders Brewing Company, we set out to create a beer that lets you embrace the unconventional. Mortal Bloom is a radiantly beautiful, hazy IPA that will wrap your taste buds with intense citrus and tropical notes of pineapple and mango. Coming in at 6.2% ABV with big aromatics and no bitterness, it's the perfect beer, if we do say so ourselves. Visit foundersbrewing.com to find Mortal Bloom Hazy IPA.
Price drop? Time to shop. Get to a Nordstrom Rack store today for first dibs on new markdowns. Now score even more, up to 70% off brands everyone loves at Nordstrom Rack. Denim, dresses, sneakers, tops, and more. Plus, get genius deals on jackets, sweaters, and boots for the whole family. Shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and save up to 70% with new markdowns. But hurry, deals this great won't last.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Now back to more with Bruce Dickinson on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. We got some fans that want to ask some questions to Bruce. Our first listener viewer is Jeff in Farmington, New York, who appears to actually be driving in his car as he is about to ask Bruce Dickinson a question. Drive safely, Jeff. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're in one of those Teslas with the autopilot on, are you?
That'll be my next purchase, Bruce.
Yeah.
But I couldn't pass up the opportunity. So an honor to talk to you. This is incredible. Appreciate it. My question for you was, what songs or song, at least, that you guys haven't played in a while on tour, are you looking at or would you love to put back in the set list for this upcoming tour?
Well, actually, the upcoming tour we've got coming up next summer is the Legacy Tour. So it's going to be the same set list, probably with a few additions. Well, we may play Riding on the Wall. We might, you know, do Stratego, and we might even get around to doing the title cut, Senjutsu. But we're not going to be losing any of the big favorites. So, you know, expect Spitfires and Flamethrowers and everything like that, because, you know, certainly in Europe, that's what people paid for 2 years ago to go and see this Legacy Tour. We've got in excess of 1 million people to play to, and then some. So there will be, I'm certain, another tour in which we will do some songs that, yeah, we haven't played for a long, long time. I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can, we've got such a repertoire now, there's all kinds of ways you can cut and slice it. I mean, Steve and myself, we once discussed, wow, you know, what if we went out and we did a whole set of all the epics, you know, sort of like Alexander the Great, Rime of the Ancient Mariner, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, you know, just epics, you know, like, wow. And we went, yeah, that would be cool. And then you could go back and do different versions of other things as well, like all the, you know, do Number of the Beast in its entirety, or, you know, so there's so many ways you can cut and slice this. And I think right now it kind of depends on just what the mood of the world is as you approach a summer touring season. So this summer tour coming up, we've already got it running through Europe, and we've already announced Rock in Rio. It would be great to come back to the USA, frankly. It would be amazing. And, you know, if Uncle Joe lets us back in, you know, then it'll all be great to get back out there and do some stuff. And then what are we then, 22 and 23? Let's see how the album goes, because frankly, we would love to get out and play a bunch of album cuts. And I'm absolutely certain we wouldn't be playing, you know, festivals, and, you know, we'd be playing arenas, and it would be to people that, you know, love the album. So, okay, instead of doing three nights, you just do one night. But you do one night of really compressed, tight album stuff. We did the Book of Souls basically, Matter of Life and Death, we did it effectively almost in its entirety. We know how successful that was, because we came back the next year, and goodness me, you know, the ticket sales were through the roof. So although a bunch of people got grumpy about it, you know, oh, you know, where's my song? You know, I only want to listen to songs that are 40 years old. And yeah, respect that. But there's a lot of people that have grown up with the band since and would like to hear us do stuff. Okay, maybe not everybody, but a significant proportion of our fans would really get off on that. You know, some smaller shows and things, something we'd like to do. But it just depends on how the world is, you know. I'm hopeful that we, by the time we get to next summer, you know, this pandemic will be behind us, and we can just get back to doing what we do.
The Legacy of the Beast tour that you said you're going to continue was remarkably well received around the world, and an incredible show. I got a chance to see it a couple times. You mentioned doing a set of epics. The last three songs on the new album are all over 10 minutes long. The majority of the songs on the record are 7, 8, 10, 12 minutes long. What is it lately with Iron Maiden and the extended long songs? Is it just you guys flexing your prog muscles, or how does that happen?
No, I think, Steve and I are partially responsible, partially irresponsible. I mean, I did the whole thing about the airship disaster, the R101, which, you know, was, God, what was that, 18 minutes or something crazy. And that was basically arranged for an orchestra, which at the time we didn't have. And we also didn't have a pianist, because although I played it on piano, I mean, my piano skills are literally two-fingered plinky plonk, you know. So although I could compose it on piano, I'm damned if I could play it properly on piano. So we actually had to do it with me playing MIDI. And I'm honestly a rubbish pianist. And I would have loved to have had a proper pianist playing that with us in the studio, but we didn't have one and we were under the pressures of time. So I had to do it. For this album, Steve is a big fan of prog, you know, and as am I, and I was talking to somebody else about this, about the different bands that we both liked. Steve, for example, a big fan of Jethro Tull. I'm also a big fan of Jethro Tull. He loves Passion Play, Thick as a Brick. I'm more Aqualung and the early stuff, you know. So, but nevertheless, we both meet in the middle there. He's a big Genesis fan, you know, the Peter Gabriel Genesis. Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, he loves all that. Me, I'm not crazy about Genesis, but I loved Peter Gabriel, I think it was his third album, solo album, Intruder, No Self-Control, scary, dark, really moody stuff. And there was a band called Van de Graaff Generator who were contemporaries of Genesis, and they were much, in a way, they were even a bit more out there than Genesis. Well, I loved them, you know, and I, you know, borrowed bits off Peter Hamill, their vocalist, vocal style and things. So we both have this prog thing spinning around our heads, along with, you know, Thin Lizzy, Deep Purple, Sabbath. He's a great fan of Nectar and the Scorpions, you know. I was, funnily enough, I was not that crazy about Judas Priest until I toured with them, with Maiden. And indeed, the Scorpions the same. So, you know, I never really got into Priest that much, apart from like Sad Wings of Destiny, until I toured with them. And then I went, wow, they do some really cool stuff, you know. And that was a great album that we toured with them, on. So those are all the kind of influences that are, you know, pinging around that end up with us doing all these great long songs. And I don't mind them because he's kind of, some of the stuff, I mean, like the Parchment, I mean, is almost like self-hypnosis listening to that. I mean, it really is, you know, it's like you're getting sleepy.
Well, there's a lot, Bruce, there's a lot of moments in those long songs too where they're instrumental passages. So I would imagine if you play them live, for you as the singer, it's a nice break for you, because even though you tend to stay out there and run around a bit, you could walk off for 5-10 minutes if you wanted to at times.
In the Parchment, I'll be round the back having a glass of non-alcoholic water. I get a 5.5 minute tea break in the middle of Parchment, but then you have to come out and squeeze your nuts afterwards. Yeah. So you pay for it in the end. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on this album which is it's lower in the range, but it's compensated for by some stuff which is really like up there. So
and by the way, speaking of Jethro Tull, that love of Tull for Maiden goes way, way back, because we all know Maiden did a phenomenal version of Cross-Eyed Mary many decades ago, and that was the first time we knew about the love of Tull. Let's bring in James right now, and James is joining us from St. Francis, Kansas. Hi, James. Thanks for waiting. You are on with Bruce Dickinson.
Hi, Eddie. Hi, Bruce. Thank you. Great honor. Hey, Bruce.
Did you just say hi, Eddie? Ah, I've got it. That's sorry. I thought I was going to have my monster. My monster from its slab began to rise.
I've got him right here, too.
That one's more handsome than me, though.
Right. Bruce, with the plethora of songs from the Iron Maiden catalog, what's your favorite to perform live? And is there an air from the band's catalog that you enjoy doing live the most?
Well, we haven't done one of the songs I really enjoy doing, and in fact, because I keep in lockdown, basically I was just trying to improve my Iron Maiden pinball score. And of course, we got some really cool tracks on the pinball machine, including Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, which we haven't done for ages. And I just love doing that song. It's the storytelling element of it is genius. And then the breakdown, the moody bit with the, you know, then into the curse it lives on in your eyes. But, oh, it just gives me goosebumps just listening to it and thinking, wow, you know, we're going to do that again one day. That's just awesome. So stuff like that. I mean, I'd love to do one or two rarities off of, I'd love to do The Prisoner again, Stranger in a Strange Land, stuff like that. You know, I like things that have a little bit of a groove to them.
Bruce, do you like singing anything from the first two records, the two records you weren't on? Do you like doing any of the D'Anno stuff? I know you've done some, but do you, and you even re-recorded Wrathchild once. Do you enjoy digging into that?
There's some stuff that, I really like on those records. I mean, I love Prodigal Son. It's fantastic. I mean, if you want to see a kind of a Jethro Tully sort of influence on the early Maiden, you know, that. In particular, I mean, Killers, the track Killers and Murders in the Rue Morgue, just great, yeah. great stuff. You know, I mean, those were the a couple of tracks that I first heard Maiden play live when I was in Samson, which is a band I was in before Maiden, obviously. And we were all playing together in the same, you know, three band bills and stuff like that. And I remember one evening, the first time I ever saw Maiden, we were headlining in this kind of big club. They were sort of like special guest. I thought, well, I better go and stand at the back here and check these guys out, you know. So, you know, there was like 200-300 people in the audience. And then about 10 minutes before Maiden came on, about 500 people walked through the door. And it was just rammed, you know, you could not move. And they came on and did Killers and Murders in the Rue Morgue. And I was like, oh my God, you know. I mean, I'd never seen up to that point, I'd never seen like Deep Purple in their heyday, you know, and stuff. So I could only imagine what they did. Actually, they didn't do a whole bunch, you know, they kind of stood around apart from Richie. But in my head, that was Maiden were doing kind of what they would have been doing, you know, and it was that same level of excitement, you know. Anyway, then I thought, wow, that's amazing. God, I'd love to sing for that band. And then at the end of the set, 500 people all left. I went, oh, guys. Well, I guess we're going on to a kind of half empty hall then. There's food for thought, you know.
Yeah. First time I saw Maiden was opening for Priest on the Killers tour in New Jersey. And I had gone to see Priest and I was like, hey, who's this new band? I'll check them out. And same sort of thing. It was like, whoa. And there were some people that were there specifically for Maiden, even at that very, very early period. Eddie Trunk here, and we go back to the callers and viewers joining us virtually on Zoom. Next up from Summit, Pennsylvania, we welcome Doug August to the show. Doug, say hello to Bruce Dickinson.
Hey, Bruce, Eddie, thanks for having me. Bruce, amazing Hi. To talk to you. Thanks so much. Can't wait to hear the rest of the tracks and see you guys again on tour. Question for you. What was the most surprising thing that came up from the creative process or the writing process for the new album? And thank you for all the great music. Appreciate it.
Well, yeah, thanks for that, for the compliment. I think we were all blown away when we did Writing on the Wall. And Steve goes, oh, I love that. Yeah, he goes, I like a bit of Cajun music. And the engineer and I mean, you could have like knocked us down with a feather. We're like, a bit of Cajun music. I didn't really think it was Cajun, but yeah, whatever, you know what I mean? And he said, no, it's got to be the first track. I went, wow, cool, okay. Because it was really different for us to do that track. I mean, that's as close to a classic rock track, which is because it just felt right. It was fun, you know, it was anthemic track, fun, bang, you know. And so, yeah, we were kind of pleased with that. But also, on the new record, in particular, obviously people single out the guitar players and they've all done amazing jobs on the record. But Nico's playing on this record is outstanding because he's just got this groove going down now. And I mean, the title cut, Senjutsu, just starts off just laying down this really dramatic groove, and it just rocks solidly. And there's the Maiden gallops throughout, but it's not kind of adolescent Maiden gallops. It's not like for the sake of it, like every song's not like da 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 da, you know. But there's moments in every song when it kicks in, and by God, when it kicks in. I mean, there's a song called Time Machine, which is one of my favorites on the record. And there's a part in that song when it just lifts. I mean, it's like those bits in Irish traditional music when you're fiddling away and then it just has this key change, and everybody just wants to jump up and down and go, I'll have another 10 shots. I'll have, you know, whoa, you know. And it's that moment. And I just see seas of people's heads bobbing up and down when it happens. And there's so much stuff like that on the record. I think it was writing on the wall. There's moments on it as well. So in the there's a few of the intros are really atmospheric. I mean, will really surprise people. I mean, honestly, you know, you will actually think for a moment that you'd stepped into the Moody Blues in sort of like the late 60s on one or two of the intros. Not for long. But that's kind of where we're going with this, with the colors and things, because we can, you know, and it is taking an audience on a little kind of musical exploration, but it's got everything, you know. It's not one dimensional, this record.
There's a song on the record called The Parchment that really jumped out at me, and that almost had a Kashmir like hypnotic vibe to it at times. Yeah. That was amazing.
Come to me. It's that moment. You know what I mean? It's like having car sitting on your shoulder. Jungle Book, you know what I mean?
And also a track called Darkest Hour jumped out at me too, and the guitar playing in that is brilliant. Oh, and yes, Nico's
amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing. And Nico's performance throughout the record, just incredible as well, as you mentioned. Let's bring Sam from Wyoming, Pennsylvania on with us to ask Bruce a question. Sam, thank you for listening and watching, and welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. This is quite a kick. Bruce, your music's been a part of my life for a long time. Thanks so much for it. My question is, Maiden has shown throughout the years to have a tendency to keep producers for a long time. You had the late, great Martin Birch for the first half of your career. And now, since you've rejoined the band in 2000, you guys have sort of settled on Kevin Shirley. What is it about Kevin that keeps you guys going back to the well? I think he does great work, but I'm just curious to know what specifically is it that keeps you guys going back to Kevin for album after album?
Well, partly, you know, Kevin's a very good producer. He's a very good, knowledgeable, technical producer. But we are difficult to work with. I mean, I have never worked with, I haven't worked with that many bands, but I know how I've worked with a fair number of musicians, and I know, you know, in general, how people tend to work. Nobody works like we do. We are definitely a one-off. You know, the way things get put together, all the funny little protocols and the little politics within the band. Not in a bad way. This is just the way it works. I imagine it's kind of the same in the Rolling Stones. I imagine the Rolling Stones, it's not like working with anybody else. It's like, you know, what are they doing now? It's like, well, they're the Rolling Stones. They always do that on a Thursday, you know, and they've done it for 45 years. That's what they do on a Thursday, you know, and nobody interferes with that, you know, and it's the same. Same with us, you know. We have all these little eccentricities that we've, and we, frankly, we couldn't work any. I don't think we could work any other way. I mean, I do albums. Obviously, I've done solo albums and things, you know, working with Roy and some great musicians. And you work in a more kind of traditional way. And Adrian's done records and works in a more traditional way. But we as a band need to get together and play in a big room and actually make a lot of noise and do, I mean, it's old school stuff. I mean, and when people say, yeah, it's, you know, it's, you're kind of like, you know, dinosaur rock. I'm like, yeah, yeah, it's good. It's like, you know, since, and that's not a bad thing. You know, how many dinosaurs are there left in the world? You know, if we, if you're going to be a dinosaur, you want to be a T-Rex, you know, what do you feed a T-Rex? Anything it wants, dude, you know, and it's kind of like that with being the producer of Iron Maiden is you're part of the team, but you got to play by our rules, you know? And there's a lot of producers I could, frankly, couldn't cope. And not that they're not incapable of doing stuff, but they would rapidly come up against a brick wall with some of our opinions and practices in studio, you know?
Kevin Shirley, the Maiden Whisperer, we'll leave it at that. He makes it all work. We're going to get two more quick ones in here because time is running short, so, but we want to let these last two folks jump in real quick. This is Jorge Ramos, who is in Austin, Texas. Jorge, you're on with Bruce Dickinson.
First of all, thank you guys, Eddie, Bruce, Sirius, for doing this. I really appreciate it. And my question to Bruce is, what is your opinion about live stream shows? And were there ever any discussions within the band to film and have a live stream set to promote the new album? Or do you guys only want to play this material live to an audience whenever the industry backs up?
There was a discussion that lasted about 30 seconds. and we just went, no way. That's, you know, I mean, because... we're the best one in the world. I mean, first of all, we hate doing videos. I mean, and we hate doing videos, and that's kind of pretending, you know. And to actually go and do a live show without a live audience is the worst of all possible worlds, you know. We need to feed off that audience, and the audience needs to feed off us. Having us just stand there like glove puppets, you know, pretending, you know, doesn't cut the mustard. It's like having, you know, it's like watching your favorite sports team playing against holograms, you know, and pretending to fall over when they're tackled and stuff like that. It just sucks. We would never do that, and certainly we would never do that and call it Iron Maiden. I mean, I suppose there might be ways in which we could do it in little sessions and things like that, but even then I'd want an audience. You know, you'd want some human being to play in front of, you know, not just a laptop, you know.
And anyone who's seen an Iron Maiden show knows how big the audience looms in the whole presentation, and the interaction between the band and audience is just a huge part of what makes it so special. So I could completely see you having that position.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same goes actually for limited capacity shows. You know, so saying, you can go tour, but you can only have 50% of the people. So you're going to play to a half empty hall. So the experience for the audience sucks. The experience for the band sucks. And the promoter goes broke. Well, you've got to work really hard to get all those three things in alignment, you know. So we just got to wait until we can do things as near normal as is acceptable, you know. And I think that's coming. That's coming. No question about that.
Final question for Bruce is from Brett. Bruce, Brett wanted to know if you had any plans to do any more solo albums like Accident of Birth or Chemical Wedding with Roy Z. Would you like to do solo records in the future? We know that Adrian did a record with Richie Kotzen during the break, and the Maiden guys all do some things sometimes on the side. Would you like to revisit some of that work and do things, do solo records again?
Oh, not only would I like to. I mean, I've got a work in progress right now that's been kind of on and off on the back burner for for 3 or 4 years now. And basically, I since the pandemic happened, I mean, I've had loads of time, but I can't go to America to do it, to finish up the writing for it, start the recording process and do all that stuff. So I'm just waiting for Uncle Joe, you know, to let me into America.
Yes, I understand completely what you're saying. You were on tour doing speaking shows, I believe, and you contracted COVID. I'm curious, overall, how is your health, not just coming off of COVID, but also you, of course, are a cancer survivor. And yep. I'm wondering how you're doing on that front as well. Is everything continue to be all clear?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I'm like a big medical experiment, you know, so like at the cancer thing 5 years ago, nearly 6 years ago now. And that was that's 3 or 4 months of treatment, and which does kick the hell out of your body. But it was a relatively brief bit of chemo in there. So, yeah, I had my double shot of vaccine back in May. Everything hunky-dory. And then I got what people are calling a breakthrough COVID infection, which was just like it's a bit more than a flu. I mean, I would really caution against people who go, oh, it's just a flu. No, it's not. And I know a lot of people who were not vaccinated, not because they didn't want to be, but they were like too young to get it initially. And, you know, 22, 23, 24-year-old people who have not been able to get out of bed for 6-8 weeks after it. They've been really sick, ongoing. Not in hospital, but their life is really screwed up. And there's all kinds of there's people talking about sort of like, you know, long-term COVID causing diabetes, causing stuff with your brain, even, dare I say it, erectile dysfunction. There you go. They didn't tell you about that when they said go and get vaccinated. There's a really good reason to go and get that, because it makes your willy shrivel. Because the blood vessels with COVID can become really inflamed. So they get blocked up and your extremities don't get enough blood. And obviously there's one extremity which is dear to our hearts as men. And if that doesn't get enough blood, then boy, you're into a world of pain or not. So there's a lot of reasons for me why the vaccine, again, anecdotal, people say, oh yeah, but you still got COVID. I said, yeah, but I'm not in hospital. I got over it in 10 days. It took me about a week after that to get my smell back and to get to start feeling more normal, get energy and stuff. But this is not just an ordinary common or garden flu. And honestly, it's my personal opinion. I'm not forcing anybody to go and do stuff, but I would advise anybody to just go ahead and get the vaccine.
I agree. I got it as early. I agree with you, and I got it as early as possible. And knock on some wood, I've been okay. Final thing. I just remembered this. I have a good friend that's a filmmaker who told me that there was some discussion that he would be working with you on potentially doing a biopic on your experience in Sarajevo. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. No. So you might be talking. Are you talking about Sasha?
Sasha. Yes.
Yeah. Sasha. Yeah. Sasha. So Sasha and I have been bouncing ideas around. Funnily enough, Sasha also does a lot of work with Kurt Sutter. And Kurt and I have also been bouncing ideas around. Kurt was the writer of Sons of Anarchy.
Yes.
Sons of Anarchy, binge watching Sons of Anarchy was what gave me the idea to have the four bikers of the apocalypse in the video. So it was a real thrill for me to get talking Zoom calls about script writing, screenwriting, and graphic novel writing with Kurt. That might turn up into something on its own anyway at some point. But yeah, Sasha and I have kind of timelined the story of the trip into Sarajevo, in which I have to say it's not really a biopic about me. I'm the excuse for making the film about the overall environment. It's an incredible story, but the people who were involved on the periphery and central to it in Sarajevo itself. Their stories are more, I think, more interesting. So, I'd be in it. Not as me. I have to get somebody else to go and play me. I don't know who. We'll figure out somebody. It is a great story, and we've already got quite a way round down to kind of mapping it out, but we haven't physically started page one of a script yet.
Yeah, Sasha did the film, the Anvil film, and many others, and he was mentioning to me that about it. And for people that don't know, there's a fantastic documentary that you did that came out a number of years ago about that experience, but this would actually be a biopic. The documentary on it already exists.
Well, Scream for Me Sarajevo was the documentary that was made actually by people in Sarajevo themselves off their own bat. There's a local documentary filmmaker called, Adnan. The first thing I heard about it was when somebody came into my local pub with a laptop and showed me the raw footage of some of the interviews that they'd done with people 20 years after the event. And basically it was people saying how much the event had changed their lives, changed their attitude, changed their lives, changed their opinion about humanity. I mean, it was heartwarming and amazing stuff to hear. And, so they said, you know, would you like to be involved? I said, well, anything I can do to help, but it's not my documentary. It's your documentary. Honestly, they did an incredible job. We were, unfortunately, it suffered from being the timing of it. We were late for things like Sundance and all these festivals. It was too late to get in for a lot of those festivals, which was very unfortunate, because now people have rediscovered it and gone, wow, we never knew about this. It's really, you know, sad, but it's out there. And, you know, if people want to go and watch it, it's well worth watching.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And hopefully it does become a biopic. That would be really interesting to see. Everybody check out the new album from Iron Maiden, Senjutsu. It is a double studio record of all new material. And it is out on September 3rd or now, depending upon when you're hearing this. We look forward to hopefully getting some Maiden shows here in the U.S. Bruce, it's always a treat when you guys come over. Like you said, hopefully Uncle Joe will allow it. And
Uncle Joe, I have to stop calling him Uncle Joe, because that's Stalin, isn't it? That was his nickname.
But thank you so much for the time and for doing this. Hopefully we'll see you in the States soon. And congrats on the new record.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, that was a lot of fun. Thanks to the audience that called in. And, of course, thanks to Bruce Dickinson. And check out the new Iron Maiden album, which is out now. And, again, video of that entire conversation is available for SiriusXM subscribers on the SiriusXM app. Again, all the interviews you hear on this podcast originate on Trunk Nation, my radio show heard daily on SiriusXM Channel 106 Volume. Be sure to become a subscriber if you're not already, and join me each and every day for rock talk and interviews. Thanks to Joel Pollack for producing the podcast. At Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, fan page on Facebook, eddietrunk.com is the website. Have yourselves a great week, everybody. Enjoy football season kicking off this weekend. Go Giants. I'll see you next Thursday for a new episode. Take care.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your crave.